My name is Knud Børge Albert. That's K-N-U-D. Børge B-Ø, but that's O-R-G-E. That's the same name as Victor Borge. And my last name is Albert, A-L-B, as in Bertha, E-R-T.
Where were you born and raised in Denmark?
I was born in Copenhagen and raised in Copenhagen.
What part specifically?
Well, we lived in several places in Copenhagen. My father was a businessman. He had a department store on the main thoroughfare when I was born. And then later, just before the war, we moved to Aarhus, where we stayed 1 year. And my father came back and opened another store in Vesterbro. And I first went to school, as I told you, in Krebs School.
Before we get to the school, what was your mother's name?
My mother's name, birth name was Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N.
And her first name?
Was Caroline, C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E.
And your father's name?
Well, they both have a lot of names. my father's first name was Hans, H-A-N-S, Hans Albert. Yeah.
Now, where did you go to school?
I first went to the Krebs School, which was a private boys' school. And my son went there too later on. And from that I went to the Mr. Carlton School, which at that time was the only state school in Denmark. So they had the best teachers, they could select the best ones they wanted. And you could only get in there on two conditions, either that your father was with the civil service in Denmark, or you had the marks to come in there. And I came for the last reason. And in 1921, I graduated from this school. And I had at that time the idea I would be a pastor. Mm. I mean, no, they're called pastors in the Lutheran Church. And I was confirmed by Olfert Ricard, that's spelled O-L-F-E-R-T, R-I-C-A-R-D, who was the famous churchman who had really brought the YMCA in Denmark into the big position it had. He was always on the radio. And that's why I decided I would be a minister. But I had other ideas. So at a certain time I gave it up. And then I went into business with my father. In the meantime, I went to Niels Brock's Handel School, that's N-I-E-L-S-B-R-O-C-K, the Brock's Handel School, which is also an old famous school in Copenhagen. So I stayed with my father in his business until 1928, when I thought I would see something new and went to France, where I worked with this man who worked with the Samite of Norway. And I stayed there a year, went back to Denmark, and met Greta, got engaged to her. And I was first offered a position in Cairo through the Niels Brock. And I said, I don't want to go to the warm climate of Egypt. But as I've seen so many often, many times in my life, there are so many coincidences. So I went out to a factory called Noma, N-O-M-A, and the president of this company happened to have the consul in Cairo, where I should have been, but he was one of his best friends. So I mentioned that. I'm sure that made it. And That Noma is a subsidiary that doesn't exist any longer. It was a subsidiary of the East Asiatic Company, the big East Asiatic Company that also has offices here in the United States. And I stayed there for 5 years. Well, this was one of the reasons why I moved away, because in 1929, England went from the goal. The United States had its depression in 1933. I was the export manager. Now, we had the social democratic government, which of course messed up the things. We had a big export to England of soap flakes. England is, as you know, the land of the soap flakes. But we made soap flakes, we put potato flour in. The social democrats, they saw this tremendous import of potato flour from Holland. So they said, why don't we use our own potatoes? So they started potato factories in Denmark, but of course the potato flour in Denmark was much more expensive. So that spoiled the export to England. So after that, I concentrated on Holland, where we exported soap and cosmetics and things like that. And I saw that the growing custom wars between the countries made it very difficult to export. And they would come, for instance, from France with French perfumes to me and see if they could arrange manufacturing perfumes in Denmark. So I had the idea, why don't we move to Holland and make the Danish soaps and so forth in Holland, so we get around this of the custom war. I spent several weeks down there, went home to Denmark, spent my whole vacation figuring out what it would cost and so forth. I submitted it to the factory, and the East Asiatic companies, other companies said no, nothing doing. So that was it. I decided to leave, and again, because I had been traveling many times in Holland, I was first offered a position with Philips, the Radio Philips in Holland, and they said to me, we'll come back and talk to you, and we were going to meet in September of 35. They came back and told the Abyssinian War, we don't want to invest in anything new at the moment. We expect a European war. So that was out. So someday I saw an ad in the paper, and I heard from them. And when I went into Kaita, I said, this is a job I will get. So this was a company with 100 stores in Denmark, food stores. And it belonged to Liver Brothers in England and Unilever in Holland. Now there again you have the catch of the coincidence, and I knew Holland. So I was so sure I would get the job that I went home and took a course in driving cars. Because I knew if I had that job, I would have to drive a car. So that was it. So in December 1935, I signed a contract with them, and for 5 years I lived with these food stores all over Denmark. And this lasted until Denmark was occupied by the Germans, because at that time we had no connections with England, Holland, and so forth. So the whole thing was, so to say, more or less dead. Of course, they had other plans in Denmark, but they had other people there. So that was it. So during the war, I gave this up. I was with the biggest industrial concern in Denmark, the Svovlsyre Superfosfat Fabrik. The Svovlsyre Superfosfat Fabrik consisted of two units. The superphosphate is used for fertilizing. It's imported from foreign countries. of course, during the war, you couldn't import phosphate, for instance, from Morocco. And so that was out. The head of that department was my boss. So actually, he was more or less inactive. The other man was head of the chemical part of the concern, which were working all the time. For instance, we established fiberglass, which you probably got much later here, but we already had that at that time. Of all the broken bottles, you make fiberglass for insulation and other things. Now, this boss of mine in the superphosphate factory had taken me on the idea that he would educate me to become his successor. But after a few years, the board took him out of that job, made him into a chairman, which doesn't mean very much because you only come to a few board meetings during the year. The other president became head of the whole concern. Unfortunately, it was a very bad fate he had, because soon after that he was, afterwards he was killed in an accident. So both I and his assistant were superfluous. And that when I, that time I decided I would go to America. I had been interested in life from my young days, because I had a cousin here in America who used to come to Denmark and visit us.
What was his name?
Alexander Becker. Or was it C-K? Well, he was still living. When we decided to go to America, we sold our house. We had bought a house in the outskirts of Copenhagen, because we lived in a kind of penthouse, just a few hundred feet from one of the German headquarters. So we might risk to be bombed one day. Actually, we had been bombed by the English just when the war started, and the airplanes went over our house. So we are not too keen. So we bought a house in the outskirts of Copenhagen. We sold that house. We sold all our furniture. And I decided to go here primarily because at that time the Marshall Plan was announced. And I thought that would be a good occasion for starting this close association between United States and Denmark. So I went to America, arrived here the 4th of April 1947, and already the first day I was here, I made a deal in steel, because I had orders for $8 million in steel with me, and they cabled Copenhagen, the import bureau, which was necessary because of the social democratic government, said they would accept it. But 3 weeks later, they canceled the whole thing. So for a long time, I was going around in the United States, in New York, to find people who would export to Denmark, which was not easy, because most of those people at that time, just after the war, quoted an overprice for exports. And the Danish Social Democrats, they would only buy at factory prices. So it took a long time before I got the next business, which was a big deal. So from that on, I had tried other things from Denmark, especially food, because I came from the food field in Denmark with my stores. And again, of course, you had difficulty, for instance, with the food. I imported blue cheese from Denmark. which in a short time became the company I had there became the fifth biggest importer of blue cheese. But then where are the blue cheese people in this country? Out in the West, they got the American to give a quota for import, and as we had only been, I had only been in business for a year, so we couldn't get a historical quota. So that made it again difficult. But then in 55, I went to RCA and got a job there in the finance department, which I kept until I retired in 1968. And that's where my life story. Now I'm retired, of course. I take a job now and then if I can find one. I say nothing, no to nothing.
May I ask if you have been back to Denmark since you came here in 1947?
No, I have not been back to Denmark, not for any special reason, except I would mention that I, during the years with the food stores, I drove, as I had to take part in the sales campaign and so forth. We had another director, as we called him in Denmark, who took care of the bookkeeping, all that. So I drove every year about 50,000 kilometers on all the roads in Denmark. So I don't feel any urge to go back to Denmark. I have no family in Denmark. So we came over here. My wife has been back to Denmark to visit her mother for her 70th year's birthday. But outside that, we have been to Europe several times, but not to Denmark, but to France, Italy, Portugal, Spain,
Africa,
Northern Africa.
Do you keep any Danish customs in your home here in the United States?
Well, we talk Danish only.
We eat Danish,
and we have Christmas Eve.
And do you still walk around the Christmas tree and sing the Christmas carols in Danish?
No, no.
Well,
with my son, we have done it, but nothing.
Now, does your son carry on any of the Danish traditions he learned in your family?
Well, of course, they have a Christmas tree, but after he graduated from Princeton, he enrolled in the army to become an American citizen, which you get immediately when you enter the army. He enrolled as a surveyor, which gives you credit at the universities. And he was so lucky that at the time United States cut down on the army in the east, so they had to send him to the east, to the far east. So he was first sent to Okinawa. From Okinawa, he had been visiting Tokyo, Korea, and finally ended up in Thailand, where he worked with an American that came directly from the Defense Department in Washington. So he has never drilled. He just went around and properly outlined the roads that America built for the Thailand soldiers.
What is his name?
His name is Franz Tüge with an hyphen, F-R-A-N-T-S, hyphen T-Y-D-E, Franz Tüge, Vass, H-V-A-S-S, Albert. When he had finished his military service, he went back to the United States and went to Berkeley to have his M.A. And there he met his wife, who was a daughter of Professor Strong in Fresno, and the niece of Chancellor Edward Strong, who had all the trouble with the students when he started in this country. Then my son worked for Warnicke in California as his chief designer. And after that, he started for himself his own business in San Francisco. I don't know how many years that was. But he saw that the conditions were not good for the building in the United States. So he took a job as a visiting lecturer at the University of Kumasi in Ghana, where he stayed for 2 years with his family. And he left that, and the first year when he came back, he went back again to Africa and worked partly with the UN, went through Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt, Kenya, and Abyssinia. And then he came back and was offered a job as associate professor at the Washington University in St. Louis, where he now has tenure and will become a full professor the next year. In the summer of 74, he went to Denmark with 20 American students, and this was arranged with the University of Aarhus. And the 20 students, they were taken to Copenhagen at the Royal Academy, where they were taught all kinds of things. And they also made field trips to Stockholm. And after he came back, he had been working on the film. He had a commercial photographer with him that took films of all what the students saw and did. And he delivered the text and wrote a little book about that.
Might be interesting.
Yes.
Does he speak Danish?
Perfectly. He was 15 years when he came here.
I understand at the present time that you are working on some sort of writing.
Yes, I am interested in writing a biography of Søren Kierkegaard and his life and his philosophy, his Christian ideas, because I think as a Dane I understand many of these things because of my closer intimacy with the Danish language and the Danish conditions. And there are also many wrong statements in many of the books I have read in this country about his life and so forth, and I think some of these things should be corrected. And I read in one book that the man who wrote the book said we should have a real biography of Søren Kierkegaard in his time. You ought in Denmark to give us a book like that. That started me on this. And as I say, the book I'm interested in writing is to put him in the historic perspective. I think that the period in Denmark is called the Golden Age of Danish literature. And nobody has ever tried to explain to any American about all this, all the literature, all these people. They all knew each other. They also knew Søren Kierkegaard. He knew them. He was not a loner in his literature, in his own writing. He was a loner. But he knew all these people. None of them, many of them crossed his life. And I think that's important to have that in a book.
What made you interested specifically in Søren Kierkegaard besides the man who said there ought to be a Danish biography on Søren Kierkegaard?
Well, because of my interest from my younger days, having studied theology and all that, I haven't given that up. I have through the years been very interested in that. And my wife interest in everything. I later on, when we married, I started in my free time at the University of Copenhagen. I studied art for 3 years. But because of the job I took over in 35, I had to give it up, simply. But I am educated with art in my home. The school gave me a subscription to the Glyptothek. I went there every day in the week, almost. So I'm educated to that, too.
Yeah.
I have so many interests. But this year, the Søren Kierkegaard, I got interested in because coming over here, I was, so to say, in a vacuum. I mean, this man I met at the Episcopal Church in New York, he is a free man. He's not bound to any dogmas and so forth, and that got me into that again, which I have been interested in since I came here in 47. That's the reason. And then I thought that Søren Kierkegaard needs some more literature. And I hope that will succeed.
Basically, do you think that Søren Kierkegaard had a tendency to encourage the writers or to reflect what the writers were already doing?
No, that's, I don't know what I should answer to that question. Now, Dr. Lowry, who introduced Søren Kierkegaard to America, he had been a minister at the American Embassy in Rome. When he retired at 65, he went to Denmark to learn Danish, to translate Søren Kierkegaard to Denmark. And he used to say he raised him from the dead because nobody thought of Søren Kierkegaard in Denmark. I have met Dr. Lowry. And in spite of he studied Danish, of course he couldn't master everything. And after I had written some of the chapters in my book, I went to Princeton University Press, which told me in a letter that they thought it was a good idea, but of course they couldn't at the moment say if they would accept the book if it's finished. But they are interested. Or there may be other. There are only three companies, publishing houses in the United States that are interested in Søren Kierkegaard. That's Princeton, Harper and Row, and Augsburg. In Augsburg.